You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Civic 855-752-4842. If you want to address our question of the day, could you ever get sick of seeing those northern lights? Did you get to see them last night? And would you want to maybe text us over a photo and we might put it on one of our social media pages? Wait, you have social media pages? Yes. Yes, we do, he said. You can follow us on social media. Well, for Up North News, you can just search for Up North News WI and follow us there. But of course, we also have a show page on Facebook called Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And because Twitter and Blue Sky don't allow such a long name, we've shortened it to PK Radio Show. You can find that over at Twitter and Blue Sky, where we put up posts and photos there as well. And then, of course, there's our question of the week from our Sunday morning newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. This week's question, should marijuana be legalized and to what degree? There is a bipartisan bill in the legislature that would change the way that weed is legalized in Wisconsin. Do you feel like it should be fully legalized for recreational use, medicinal only, tightly restricted, or fully restricted? We'd love to know what you think. And the people who subscribe to our Sunday morning newsletter get to see the question of the week first before everybody else. And then we talk about it on the radio for the rest of the week here. All right, well, Derek Van Orden made national news. And I'm sure that this was a nice little boost for him. I'm not really sure what it says, though, for his constituents. There I am watching NBC Nightly News, and they're putting up the social media clip that he put up of him getting set to ride his motorcycle from Western Wisconsin to Washington, D.C. for taking a vote coming up here on ending the government shutdown. Again, a deal that will, for the moment, lock in place skyrocketing health insurance rates. Derek Van Orden is rushing back to D.C. to jack up your health insurance costs. And doing it on a motorcycle. I got this to say. Even the most passionate motorcycle riders are smart enough to read a thermometer. That might explain why Van Orden is getting the national attention. He's riding through this windshield, you know, through this windshield. He's riding through this windshield, racing the 900 miles there. And it's a fair question to ask, is Derek Van Orden showing himself to be the embodiment of hell on wheels, eager to take a vote to end the government shutdown, or is it more a case of brain freeze, choosing to focus on performative politics while racing to take a vote that could lock in huge hikes in health insurance costs? Or is it an indictment of the job being done by U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, that members of Congress would rather ride a motorcycle through very cold wind chills than to try to fly because of the way that the government shutdown has been managed? Well, that takes us to Sean Duffy, the former congressman up north in the 7th Congressional District, who was in Wausau recently for a meet and greet for his son-in-law, who is running for his old seat in Congress. Duffy has, in many ways, been part of the public face of the Trump administration, just echoing and me-tooing whatever it is that Donald Trump has to say. There were some stories about some White House staffers grumbling about him reigniting his feud with Elon Musk, as if the richest man in the world thinks a reality TV guy role-playing as NASA administrator is going to outrank him in Trump world. But anyway, on the visit, as mentioned in an article by Laura Schulte of the Milwaukee Journal-Sentinel, Duffy suggested and agreed with President Trump that air traffic controllers who have called in sick might not be eligible for bonuses that Donald Trump is floating out there on social media. Yesterday morning, Trump said on his tiny network that he was, quote, recommending a bonus of $10,000 per person for distinguished service for air traffic controllers who took no time off during the shutdown, and Duffy said he would support that. Trump in his post acknowledged that air traffic controllers will be paid in full when the shutdown ends, but that those who didn't come in to work at times may receive, quote, a negative mark against their record. Ooh, the president knows that you called in sick and you get a negative mark. He says those who want to find a new job would not be awarded any payment or severance, he said, and they'll be replaced by, quote, true patriots who will do a better job. Really? Did you suddenly fix the shortage of qualified air traffic controllers? Or should I be even more nervous to fly and maybe ride shotgun on, does Derek Van Norden have a sidecar? He might be able to shuttle riders around. Anyway, thank you, Mr. President and Secretary Duffy, for reminding America why we have labor unions. As noted by air traffic controllers, whose messages I've seen, while there is technically a union, it's not allowed to strike, of course, dating back to Ronald Reagan. Calling in sick is really the only influence they have to express a demand to improve a dangerous working environment. And what of those who called in sick because, you know, they were sick? Or could no longer afford childcare because they weren't getting a paycheck, or needed a spouse to work a job with a paycheck that Donald Trump and Sean Duffy weren't holding hostage? Now, if you're trying to be a tough guy and you're siding with Trump and Duffy on this, yeah, that'll teach him a lesson. Well, then I congratulate you for having a life so privileged that you've never encountered a work environment so bad, including withheld paychecks, that you had to consider doing things you might not otherwise do, like go on strike. Oh, I've had jobs, you'll say. I've had tough jobs. Well, clearly not tough enough, and good for you. But here's the deal. Trump is not a king, and Duffy is not his little prince, much as he would like to be. We don't have presidents who willy-nilly decide you get paid X, and you get paid Y, and you get fired. As much as Donald Trump wants to, again, role-play like he's on The Apprentice, he doesn't get to fire rank-and-file air traffic controllers individually or decide which ones get bonuses. We don't live in that kind of third-world country, at least not before this year's Banana Republic took over. When we come back, we're going to have today's history lesson. We're going to learn the real origin behind the Buffalo Springfield song For What It's Worth. And as we look at things that happened on this day in history, I'm going to tell you about the Oregon Whale Incident. That's all coming up, along with so much more between now and 9 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in. Live from the lake, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Civic Media has more sports coming up on the air this weekend than you can shake a hockey stick at. And we're going to start with hockey. Badger men's hockey versus Ohio State. There will be games Friday, Saturday. Friday's coverage begins at 6:30. I believe Saturday's at 5:30. Catch the Badger men's hockey team on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids and WJMS up in Ironwood, Michigan. On Saturday, the Badger football team will be playing at Indiana. Coverage begins at 9 a.m. Saturday on four different stations across the network. And then on Sunday, you've got the Packers versus the New York Giants. Coverage begins at 10 a.m. on four other stations across the Civic Media Radio Network. Some folks aren't going to hear those games because it's gun deer season. We're getting to be that time of year again. You know, Thanksgiving's creeping up, and you can't do that till after you have that nine-day gun deer season getting started the weekend before. And of course, you hear the word tradition out there a lot when talking about hunting, something that, you know, fathers and sons and daughters and others have done over the years. But just as much a tradition in the Park Falls area is the Deer Hunters Roundup. And now that the stations up there are part of the Civic Media family, we wanted to talk to Gray Gunderson a bit more about the Deer Hunters Roundup that is happening. So Gray joins us now from Park Falls. Gray, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me today. It's a beautiful bluebird day up here, but a chilly one, and hunting feels like it's coming in the air.
It most definitely does, yes. So we've got the season coming up, which of course brings us to the Deer Hunters Roundup. And, you know, we do a weekly call with the entire staff around Civic Media, and I always appreciate seeing about this time of year the excitement that people feel because, you know, we talk about local radio, and there's ways that local radio still has that connection to the community. But few have the connection that y'all have up there with the Deer Hunters Roundup. And so tell us a bit about what exactly it is, and then we'll get into just how popular it is with listeners.
The Deer Hunters Roundup, well, first of all, is a very basic show format in which we have live call-ins, the way radio used to really be built on, live audience participation, calling in specifically from deer camps. We're talking to deer hunters. We're talking to, in many cases, multiple generations of people who are at deer camps, which is a phrase that encompasses everything from the shack you're picturing from Escanaba into Moonlight up to something that would be a very expensive Airbnb that only gets used for a couple weekends a year. So the upshot is the people who you don't think would share much about what they're doing are telling all about the experience, and they're ragging on each other a little bit. They're giving each other jokey code names and camp names. But it's one of those things that I thought was totally normal, Pat, until I moved away and realized that we had something weird going on. You know, when you leave home at 18, 19, and you realize, boy, my parents did that one thing really, really weirdly. I thought it was normal because I grew up that way. That for me is the Deer Hunters Roundup. I'm from this station I work at. It's my hometown. So these are my family members and friends calling in to report, yep, no deer this year here at the Green Acres camp out of Highway Loretta over there. And forgive me, I know that sounds like a stereotype, but there's going to be 30 calls just like that a week from Saturday.
Of course there are. What do we always say? There wouldn't be stereotypes if some people didn't insist on living up to them. That's how they get created. So the Deer Hunters Roundup has been a staple for what, a little over 50 years now?
Exactly. So 50 was last year, if I'm not mistaken. I know we shouted about it often enough, but I think I've just kind of repressed it because there was extra work to be done. And you absolutely will find companionable disagreement on who started it. We actually the Civic Media Network just recently acquired another station up north in the UP who will absolutely claim they were doing it first. We have not resolved that conversation yet.
No, there's nothing that gets resolved between Wisconsin and Michigan, from ownership of the UP to which state looks more like a mitten. It's what we do. It's in our DNA. We're talking to Greg Gunderson from the Civic Media stations up in the Park Falls area about the Deer Hunters Roundup. And actually, specifically, there's what, three different stations up there. On what stations and times can people hear it?
Well, actually, we'll be active at about 6 p.m. every day of the gun deer season, except for Thanksgiving, because we've got to give everybody a break for that one. We'll be rotating hosting duties a little bit, but basically every day but Thanksgiving, 6 p.m. on 98Q Country. We'll also be going live over in Hayward, I believe, on WHSM, and then we'll be down in Wisconsin Rapids as well. So tune into stations from those towns. There's multiple in each space, but at least one of them will be rocking the Deer Hunters Roundup. It was really cool. Last year we did that for the first time. We opened it up to Wisconsin Rapids, even though the programming itself and all the calls were going into Park Falls and we were just multiple streaming that. It created this really cool thing where we just expanded the area where we were receiving calls from. So instead of Loretta and Draper just west of us and a couple cities just east, we're getting places way south of them participating in the same level. And again, these are the people who you find them in public. They're not talking much. These are the quiet hunter guys that are just buying ammo and leaving. They will open their hearts up like you're their therapist and they've already paid for it if you want to talk to them about deer hunting and help them spread the word a little bit.
It is, because you truly are among friends. You are in your element, and that's great. Talk about some of the cast of characters that make up the Deer Hunters Roundup. I know there's, we got to start with Joel, of course, because he couldn't be here. He's busy doing, you know, live local radio up there in Park Falls.
Yes, every Wednesday morning, he's got a very involved program where he's bringing on local business leaders and just members of local organizations. He calls it reality radio, that's patterned off of the original reality TV 20 some years ago. That kind of speaks to the mentality around here. We don't fix it if it ain't broke. And let me tell you, the Deer Hunters Roundup ain't broke. One of the best things going on with it is Joel Karnick. He just hit 25 years here last year in Park Falls. So he's been doing the roundup for half of its existence on 98Q, and it shows. He can ask two questions of your average hunter that will have them spouting paragraphs and saying silly things like we spotted a giraffe in the woods. That, by the way, is one of the best little treats. Is sometimes families will call in. They want to have their deer camp on the show in some way. One of the cutest ways you can do that, just hand the phone to your six-year-old. So we'll have to struggle. Yeah, we'll have to kind of coddle some kids who don't know what to say a little bit, but you'll get nothing cuter. We actually had, I think, three daily reports of giraffes sighted in the woods last year. And Joel is all of it. He'll never accept credit, but I worry about that one day he takes off and they hand me the reins, let me tell you.
Well, let's hope then that he sticks around. And of course, you've got plenty of other teammates up there in Park Falls that make this all come together.
Yes, yes, indeed. Big G will be there. If anybody's heard of Big G, you will remember it. And if you haven't heard of Big G, you're missing out. So make sure you catch his. Big G, of course, is nominally a salesperson here in Park Falls. But that also means that he's arranging all the sponsors for shows like the Deer Hunters Roundup, which is special because we'll often bring those sponsors, those business owners, right into the studio to talk about their involvement and their business tie-ins with hunting. So there'll be more people in the studio than ever before, including local business leaders. And we'll probably have one of the most notorious hunters from definitely the most notorious hunting camp right in studio. He's not quite an outlaw, but you'll be thinking about outlaws listening to him.
We're talking to Craig Gunderson from the Civic Media stations up in Park Falls about the Deer Hunters Roundup. 6 p.m. most days of the gun deer season on 98Q Country out of Park Falls, which you can also listen to through the Civic Media app and the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. And that has to be, Gray, the really cool part is that, you know, instead of just being on one stick up north, that you've now got essentially a global potential audience through the app and the website that people can, you know, even if they live in other places now, they can get a little touch of home.
Well, I mentioned earlier, Pat, that moving away showed me how different the Deer Hunters Roundup is. It's not that super normal thing that everyone's doing. The same can honestly be said without calling me special or anything. Like, we do things just a little different up here in general, simply if for no other reason, because the population's a little bit lower. And again, I didn't realize that until I moved away. And again, when I realized it a second time when we joined the Civic Media Network, and it slowly became clear that we break every rule that all the other stations follow and get away with it and probably need to do it. So the civic family grew in a very unique and lopsided way, I think, when the Northwoods was added onto it, but it's never been better than since we've joined the Civic Media Network. So if you want the best form of one of the coolest shows in Wisconsin, catch the Deer Hunters Roundup starting a week from Saturday.
Yeah, and again, it's no knock on our friends at the stations in Waukesha and Madison and whatnot, but a big part of Civic Media's genesis was to provide, new voices throughout the rest of Wisconsin, and then help some familiar voices gain a little bit more ground and spread it around through the app and through the website. Craig Gunderson is our guest talking about the Deer Hunters Roundup and, of course, the tradition of the gun deer season. And, you know, if there's one topic that comes up all the time, it's the decline of, you know, the population of hunters. Families aren't as big, not as many kids take up the hunting tradition, you know, from their parents and things like that. And I mean, that's, you've got the demographics of the baby boom and everything else. It's a conversation point, but what else can you do besides try to generate interest in hunting with younger folks, whether they're up there or elsewhere around the state?
It's one of those things that's very hard to create, Pat. I think kids are kind of notorious in a way, if you will, for you never know what they're going to fall in love with. One of the things I highlight on my shows often is when the EMS services, like the ambulances and the fire service, they'll sometimes do like a truck tour thing where they just park a couple emergency vehicles in a parking lot here at City Hall and bring your kids, take pictures in the seats. I always mention to people, you don't know if your kid's about to discover their lifelong passion when they do that. So bring them, expose them to that, see what they think. Hunting might be even tougher because there's a lot of barriers for entry beyond the cost, beyond needing to know how and where to do it. It just isn't necessarily that appealing to modern youth a lot of the time. And that's a simple fact we've got to deal with. Duck hunting, for example, there have been studies done over the last few years based on current trends. The duck population is basically unthreatened based on the expectations of waterfowl hunting. Basically, if things stay how they will, the ducks are going to be fine because the number of hunters has steadily been declining. That may or may not be true with deer hunting, but it speaks to the general decline in hunting as a popularity. But even with fewer people hunting, there's fewer deer being harvested every year. And with grocery prices going up, how can we preserve hunting for hunters and for the animals? Our questions that get more important every day. More of my family and friends are filling their freezers with venison, but less will be able to the more who need to. So yeah, there's a few fundamental questions just hanging. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, you're literally talking about harvesting. And in this case, perhaps for people other than yourself, that you could be donating toward and helping them. I know that my, my daughter who lived in Idaho for a number of years, her husband at the time was a hunting and fishing guide. And, you know, you counted on getting that one elk every year to stock the freezer. And plenty of people still do that with venison. Not as many these days. I mean, things are just a little bit different now, not just the numbers, but the technology too, Gray. You've got hunters are a little more high tech than ever before.
Yes, absolutely. And I immediately think of the extremes, which is literally carting an ozone generator system to your stand, which is actually quite affordable. And I mean, cameras might be the more readily available example, where people are getting updates on their cell phone of the camera that's pointing at where they keep their stand. You know, you used to have to sit there and see the deer. Then yeah. We've got cameras that you can go and grab the stick from and put it on your computer, and you can sit there at your computer. All the hunters gather up, almost like you're getting your results for your LSAT or something. And it's just, here's the pictures of the buck that came in. And that was super exciting. Nowadays, my brother just walks up to me and says, here's the deer that was at my stand 4 minutes ago. And he just holds his phone up and here's the picture on the cell camera. For me, the biggest departure though, might be the fact that my dad, who has been wearing Stormy Cromers and wool pants and hunting since he was able to walk, still wears that same gear, just now in a ground blind that has a heater in it. I mean, when you can pay $80 for a propane heater that will fill your entire space with more than enough warmth, and you're not going to see fewer deer as a result, why would I ever suffer in the cold? Which, by the way, was my biggest barrier, aside from the fact that I feel like I want the deer to grow, so I only do it when we're in leaner times.
Sure.
But like, yeah, it was also just too cold, so I better be really hungry before you're going to drag me out there.
Yeah, well, the technology does have its positive side, of course. All right, well, Greg Gunderson's got this and much more with the Deer Hunters Roundup, 6 p.m. most days of the gun deer season on 98Q Country in Park Falls and through the Civic Media app and website. Greg, thanks very much. Have a great time.
You too, Pat. Thank you.
All right. Good to see you. We will have some final news and notes from Lake Wissota after this. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. As I've mentioned, the Civic Media app has a voice note feature. You can look at that Civic Media app, call up one of the stations where you hear this fine program or any other program, and you'll have the option to call that station, text, or leave a voice note, a quick little voice message. Feel free to use that to let us know your questions and comments through the Civic Media app, civicmedia.us. Sean O'Malley joins us now at a new time to talk about your money and the markets, and I thought maybe we wouldn't have quite as much to talk about because with the government shutdown, there hasn't been, you know, a lot of data that's out there. But we do have something to talk about because the president of the United States has been talking up the notion of a 50-year mortgage, not a 15, not a 30, but a 50, and I think everybody knows what the selling point would be. It's like, well, if you stretch it over 50 years, your monthly payment's going to be so much lower. That's Donald Trump's answer to affordability. Sean, good morning. What's the punchline?
Good morning, Pat. The punchline is that, similar to most other financial or economically oriented thoughts that go through Donald Trump's head and come out his mouth, it's wrong.
You'll be paying a little less per month, but in interest. I mean, you've run some numbers on here. Do you want to grab an example here?
I'm happy to share that. So what I did is when I first saw it, I thought, okay, let's check what the actual difference is, because I'm betting it's pretty low. And having run the numbers through an actual mortgage model, adjusting, of course, for the fact that you will have a slightly higher interest rate. And I think I actually went a little maybe too low on the increase, because the typical increase in interest rates as you go from 15-year to 30-year is between 50 and 75 basis points. So that's 0.5% to 0.75%. So what I did is I just added 0.5% going from 30 years to 50 years. And the it was revealing. The payment, if it doesn't go down much, it goes down by a whopping 5%. So you're still paying 95% of the same mortgage, you know, payment monthly. You're just doing it for an extra 20 years.
So interest cost wise, did you roll the numbers on like a $500,000 house to give us an example?
I did. Yeah, I did it on a $500,000 because the average home prices are in the U.S. are $522,000 and change right now. Check the number.
Okay.
So we're a little bit below that, but we're, you know, in the ballpark of what a lot of people are seeing these days. So on a 30-year mortgage, current interest rates, you're going to be paying a little over $600,000 in interest expense over those 30 years. If you were to do the same with a 50-year mortgage, you would be paying over $1.2 million in interest expense over 50 years.
On a $500,000 home, you'd be paying $1.2 million in interest payments.
Correct.
For a monthly payment that is maybe about 5% lower.
Correct.
What could possibly go wrong? I mean, you would, for anybody else, you'd say, get out of here. For Donald Trump,
as a matter of fact, and they did. They thought about doing this. You got to dial it back to the financial crisis time, right?
Yeah.
When everybody was trying to, you know, get mortgage origination to continue, that was the engine that was driving the economy forward at that point in time. So they started doing crazy stuff, the pick a pay, you know, the ninja loans, no income, no job or assets.
Oh, bad.
And when it came to maturity, there were some lenders that did a 40-year mortgage out there, but nobody was crazy enough to do a 50.
Until now, from a guy who has, you know, he's made his money by trying to get people to pay more money than they otherwise would. He's got a, you know, for example, he loves to see his properties valued low for tax purposes, but then he grossly inflates their value when he's trying to sell them. And it's one thing to do that on the margins, but Donald Trump, you know, supersizes this.
Oh, it was orders of magnitude. Take a look at the book, you know, Lucky Loser by two Pulitzer Prize winning authors. Very good book, goes through that in great detail. And, you know, the other thing is that why would you take business advice from a guy who's gone through bankruptcy how many times?
Five or six, yeah, at least.
Yeah, and let's not forget that the majority of his wealth right now is courtesy of his cryptocurrency exchange. So it's really just within the last year that most of the wealth that he has been accumulated.
So this is not the guy you should necessarily be taking financial advice from. We're talking to Sean O'Malley. He's a Hudson native, a lengthy Wall Street career in anti-money laundering, financial risk management, data analytics, compliance, fraud, and risk management. You were around Wall Street when it all went down, when, you know, we were talking about housing and real estate and mortgages. And so, pardon the psychological question.
Front row seat to it all, Pat. I was at one of the companies that was guaranteeing a lot of the stuff. I knew what was going on at a very detailed level before anybody else really, you know, even among the experts, had a lot of, you know, inkling of what was happening.
And you know, the algorithms, you know, TikTok and Instagram Reels and whatnot, you just never know what it's going to feed you. And sometimes when you watch something, it feeds you more of it. And I've never watched movies like, is it The Big Short? Is that like the quintessential movie about the housing bubble bursting?
I would actually say that Margin Call is a better one.
Margin Call. Okay, yes.
But ironically, The Big Short is a great book, great movie. As a matter of fact, after reading the Big Short, there was one of my colleagues and I actually attempted to be the guys in The Big Short. But I realized that we needed to have an ISDA master agreement, and we just didn't have basically the Brad Pitt character in the movie to help us get it. We actually did contact one of the guys who probably could have done it, but he said no. So, but for that, I would be on my own island somewhere.
So as somebody who has seen this up close, and we all like to naively think, well, nothing like that will ever happen again. But we just were talking a week or two ago about the AI bubble that we've got here. But when you see something like this with a 50-year mortgage, and you've seen what you've seen about the abuse of, you know, mortgage securities and things like that, I mean, how does it make you feel when I first told you, hey, Trump's putting a 50-year mortgage out there, and you've seen what people do on Wall Street with these things?
Absolutely. I thought, okay, that is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard. Most risky, very certainly. And just sort of looking at what the potential economic impact would be. Anytime you see product innovation happening in a particular marketplace, in order to make that product, whatever it is, be it a house or whatever, more affordable to the consumer, you know you are towards the end of that cycle. You know that there is a correction coming. One of the reasons that I continued to ring the bell using your analogy about today's marketplace, particularly around AI, is that in the NVIDIA, the big company, right, the $5 trillion market capitalization company, yes, they're big in AI, but they're making the chips. I heard a good analogy from Paul Krugman, the noted Nobel Prize winning economist. He said that NVIDIA is sort of like if everybody is out there mining for gold, you know, analogously in the AI world, NVIDIA is selling them the picks and shovels.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, when people sort of realize there isn't that much gold out there to be had, picks and shovels are going to go on sale. And so, yeah, you're seeing a situation where the marketplace has yet to realize and sort of make it clear what the economic benefit, how the revenue is going to happen, how they're actually going to make money with this. So in that sense, it's a little dot-com-ish.
Yeah. Sean O'Malley's with us talking about your money in the markets. The U.S. Supreme Court heard the case on the president's decision to invoke an Emergency Economic Powers Act to enact tariffs. You've heard the arguments made by the Supreme Court, made by the Solicitor General on behalf of the Trump administration. Where do you think this is going?
Yeah, so I sort of did it in sort of a, you know, who's thinking what? Because there are a couple of parties in play here. So I thought, let's start, you know, with what Trump thinks. And that should be pretty obvious. He thinks he can unilaterally decide to tariff any country he wants. And, you know, one of the most egregious examples is when he, you know, kind of rage tweeted after seeing the commercial during the World Series that the province of Ontario had put on, using Reagan's very own words about tariffs to essentially shame Trump and make him look stupid, which, granted, is pretty easy to do. But that's still what he thinks. He thinks he can unilaterally do it. Now, you know, the Supreme Court, I think the one thing that's kind of holding them back is they're saying, well, you know, repaying the tariffs could be very messy, right? I mean, how are we going to undo all this? How are you going to figure it out? Whereas businesses have come back and said, well, it's not messy at all. Every customs entry, every entry for everything coming into the country has a line item for the tariffs paid. So okay, all you have to do is go through the line item, see who paid it, and return the money, which is what, by the way, Trump's attorneys have already agreed to should they lose the Supreme Court case.
Right.
Now, the gamblers are thinking Trump's chances of winning this case are maybe about 24%, only about 24%. So everyone is expecting that the Supreme Court will say, no, you can't use tariffs in this way.
I just like that administration officials are now talking about, you know, providing some kind of a check or a bonus to Americans because the tariffs have been so successful. And it's like, well, then who put those tariffs on in the first place? I mean, you're paying people back the money that they'd paid. You invoked this national sales tax. Now you're getting them a rebate and you're claiming to be a hero.
Right. And I love how Trump lies about the magnitude, even though his own Treasury Department is clearly publishing the numbers, which is why we report them here on your show. Trump is talking about, oh, we've collected trillions of dollars. BS. Sorry.
Yeah.
Plain, simple BS. The last number reported, and we're still waiting for the October number, admittedly, but through September, the total collected was $214.9 billion, as reported by the U.S. Treasury Department. So if you're going to try to return that, okay, that's fine. That's an admirable thing to do. But considering that it's already cost the average household $2,400, you know, that's, if anybody wants to do that trade, I'll sign up as the exchange and happily I'll give you $2,000 if you give me $2,400 all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something we've seen so many times where we're the check is in the mail is almost the mentality that we get out of this. But by the way, it either is not actually coming or it's money we already took from you in some other backdoor way. Right. But it's the same with all the trade deals where he's actually bringing things either back to even or even worse than original, but he still gets to announce, quote unquote, a deal and look like a winner that way. And it's just
right. And and don't forget, he was going to be paying the farmers out of the money that we've collected in tariffs. I'm like, this is not an endless checkbook.
No. And that, by the way, that 40 billion total for Argentina, you can look at it a couple of different ways, that it either could go back to farmers or it could pay for enhanced Obamacare tax credits and instead is going to help out another politician that he likes. We break all this down with Sean O'Malley weekly. We appreciate the insight into it, Sean, and we will talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks so much, Pat.
All right. Thank you. All right. Still to come, we will be talking to Nancy Stensel. She's the Marathon County Democratic Party chair. She'll be in for Chad Holmes, who's off taking a little bit of time off. Sports-wise, don't forget, we've got Badger football against Indiana Saturday starting at 9 a.m. And on Sunday, the Packers versus the Giants coverage begins at 10 a.m. on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlin.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Tomorrow on the program, Up North News newsletter editor Ellie Bordeaux will be along to tell us what she's been working on, and we'll talk to Earl Ingram from the What's Going On with Earl Ingram podcast. Learn more over at civicmedia.us about what Earl is up to. We asked earlier in the day, this is, as Parker Olson, producer extraordinaire, tells us, this is National Sunday Day on this Tuesday, and I think the results are in, and apparently Turtle Sunday. That's the one that people like most. So, Parker, congratulations. You're on the winning team once again.
I'm the winner once again.
Go get yourself a turtle sundae later today as a result. I think you should. I think it's a good idea. So that's the question we asked today. And, of course, there's also a question of the week from our Sunday morning newsletter. And we are asking folks, what is your view on whether Wisconsin should have legal pot or not for recreational use or medicinal purposes. So again, you can use the comment sections or you can subscribe to our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, it's time to play some show and tell with Parker. I have not told him that this was coming.
Oh boy.
I have a furnace that is not working exactly as it should, and I need to look at the manual. And, before I don't want to call in
An
expensive repair tech if it's something relatively simple.
Well, and so you're a Midwestern man.
Yeah, I went to go looking for it in the place where one goes, and that would be the box where you throw all of your, manuals and receipts and warranty information. And it is...
And in there you found the instructions for a printer that actually you haven't owned for 20 years.
Funny that you should say that, because here's a representative sample of what all was in the box. Here's a manual for Windows 98. It includes a receipt for a computer I got from Gateway. I don't remember the last time Gateway did computers. It's been a while.
Yeah. No.
As a reporter. I would sometimes be out in the field and I would use a tape recorder, a cassette tape recorder. So I still have the manual for this cassette tape recorder that I would use to go out onto news stories and record folks. I don't know where that is.
I was going to say, how long has the tape recorder been gone for?
Oh, at least 20 years. Here's a Casio keyboard. We had a Casio keyboard for a while. It was one of those, synthesizer thingies.
Sure.
I don't play piano. I don't know.
Have the manual. You can learn.
I've got vacuum cleaners from so long ago. I've got a furniture. How to assemble things in case you need the parts. I've got here's one from a Norelco electric razor. Here's one from a Remington electric razor. I have not used an electric razor in at least 20 years. I have cordless phones.
Oh, again, boy.
I haven't used in forever cordless phones. I mean, that was the latest and the greatest technology until the cell phone came along. Here's a manual for a cellular phone the size of a brick.
Guys,
the original cell phones.
I want our listeners to know that he held up a manual that said cellular pocket telephone.
Yes. it doesn't even say the brand name of it on there.
I mean, how many brands were there? Did they need to specify back then?
There were a lot of toys because I raised two girls. So here's a manual for twirling ballerina Barbie.
Of course.
Here's one for singing Ariel.
Oh.
Because we had a doll that could swim in the tub with them and sing until it started. Because they shouldn't be putting toys in the bathtub.
It's hard to sing underwater, you know.
Coffee makers that I haven't had in forever. This is a tent. A tent that I thought we still had till one of the daughters said, "Oh no, I brought that with me to Idaho some time back."
Oh,
if you are in the market for a manual for a John Deere push mower, I got the manual for it. I haven't had the manual in forever. And I've got one more. This is like a family heirloom.
Oh boy,
this is from a place called Groundwater Waterbeds.
Sure.
This is the receipt for our first purchase as a married couple, which was a bed, and water beds were all the rage. And this is from July 31st of 1987. And it is a water bed that we paid $998.48
did for. Okay, my parents, I'm pretty sure, also had a water bed at some point.
Everybody did at some point in the 70s and 80s. Yes.
I'm not positive if it was in the basement or what.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a story of someone laying on that bed and getting absolutely frozen.
Oh, yeah. It would happen. Yes. You could frozen, or you could boil like a frog, because the heater on these things, and for those young enough, it's a big bladder. It's a big water balloon,
sure.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And then you had special sheets that went over it so that they wouldn't keep falling off. And it was actually, when it was at the right temperature, it was actually really nice. You could get something that was really wavy or not very wavy at all. But if it malfunctioned, you know, you could be frozen, or if somebody turned it up too high, you couldn't sleep in there because you were boiling. And of course, a couple of different times, Sherry would drop an earring and it would fall in between, and suddenly there'd be a little leak that had to be patched up on the fly.
So why is my butt wet? Did I pee myself again?
Last but not least, do you remember me telling the story about it? My first job, my first radio job in Rice Lake, I entered and won a VCR that they were giving away, which I probably should not have entered. I found the manual for that. So here's the Fisher VCR.
So there's evidence now.
In a moment of vindication, it occurs to me that about 6 years later, it wasn't working. And so I found the receipt, the repair receipt. I did have to spend $87.31 to get the VCR fixed. So
that's more than
there
paid
was
for it,
a price to be paid. There's no such thing as a free lunch, or in this case, a free VCR.
Wow.
I have none of these things anymore, but I got the manuals. And by the way, I'm still looking for the furnace manual. It's around here someplace. Parker, thank you. Have a great day. Looking forward to tomorrow and having you all back here as well. Thanks to all of our guests. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Enjoy your Tuesday. We'll see you bright and early back here tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.